You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Oh yeah, I forgot, I'm playing angry music today. Yeah, my boy, same initials as me, Marshall Mathers. Yeah, listen to this for about 10 minutes straight. Just this, I created this bumper on a loop. Yeah, this 41 seconds. All you have to do is sit there and tap your toe and bob your head with your headphones on. And you'll become angry. I don't know why, it's angry music. Yeah, then you could throw that in there. But I'm not supposed to be angry because Bob doesn't want me to be angry when he comes on today. So, joining me from someplace in Maryland is Bob Nielsen. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Angry Mike?
I'm pissed.
No kidding. I had to turn my radio down when I was listening to you.
Oh, really? Why? Because like, whoa, where are you?
We've been raving about everybody.
Let's stick our head in the sand and let's all be happy. Yeah, wait.
It's better than 1968.
When we leave the pitchforks and the torches down Pennsylvania Avenue, they'll know. Yeah.
We got to talk about positive things like your interview with Grant Newsham and your interview with Joe Dumford recording his talk at the National Press Club.
Isn't that awesome?
Phenomenal.
I mean, when you hear that, right? And then you hear John McCain, like, the following day say, I'm waiting for a strategy. We don't have a strategy. It's like, hey, listen, dumbass. Do you not pay attention? You know, did you not listen to what the chairman said? Did you not listen to what Mattis said? It's like, God almighty, man. It's just surrounded by idiots. And when you, I mean, the beautiful thing, and if you're listening, and if you haven't listened, go into the podcast. You can just search on Dunford, and you'll see his Q&A with the National Press Club. He's allowed to speak in complete thoughts, right? Not some, you know, 10-second soundbite that you're going to get of the sexiest thing that he did. He said in some kind of 2-hour testimony, okay? He gets to talk in complete sentences about strategies and our postures in different places and a whole variety of subjects. And you can see why he has a reputation for being the smartest guy in the room. In fact, Will Cosentini, who's been on.
But he's the first guy I've heard that made any sense about what we're doing in Syria. The first one.
Right. Right. No, without a doubt. Without,
Nobody else makes any sense.
Well, and so if you don't think that he and Secretary Mattis are going to put something together that does what people have come on this program and have lamented for a year now, is the lack of a strategy linked to national aims with our resources lined up underneath that. The other thing he talks about is how our posture in these places. He said, look, we look the partner now. We support, we train, and we have assets that we can use in support of different organizations, but they have to fight on the ground because the question ultimately is what comes in the aftermath of Mosul? What comes in the aftermath of Raqqa?
But why didn't we ask that 15 years ago?
I don't know.
Why didn't we ask that when Bush jumped into Iraq?
Ask your boy Bush. Ask your boy Cheney.
No, ask Rumsfeld.
Why do you have to say the R word on this show? Yeah, right? I don't care. You could say the F word till your tongue falls out. But the R word? Come on, man.
Or go back a few years. There was a guy named McNamara did the same shit.
Yeah.
1967, 68.
Wait, and you, are you...
Sure, you're not a long-lost relative?
So you said... Let me read you something he sent me before he came on, before he started going down this road. I want the happy Mac, not the pissed off one. Then why are you fuel injecting the program right now?
Let's talk about Grant Newsham, the smartest guy you've had on. He is off the charts brilliant. He's forgotten more about Asia than 99% of the people in D.C. inside the Beltway have ever known.
I'm curious about you. How many years did you spend in Asia, to include Vietnam?
Well, I was out there in Vietnam in 66, 67, and then I started working out in Asia again in the 70s. We were building a great big project in Hong Kong, 99, 20-story buildings, and then we built all over Asia that period about 10 years. And then in the 90s, I took over Turner International, and we're still building in Asia. We just opened a 77-story building a couple of years ago in Saigon and 2 5-star hotels up in Hanoi. And we've been out in that part of the world a long, long time. And we got jobs in Kazakhstan right now. We got jobs down in Malaysia.
Okay, so tell me the secret. So when you hear Newsham talking about China, and he said this from
he knows and understands the Oriental way of thinking, and he understands that, and he knows and understands that North Korea is put together with chewing gum. When your whole countryside is starving, and the only money you have goes into arms, something's drastically wrong. And when somebody kicks out the wrong bamboo pole, that thing is going to collapse. Now, we might do a lot of damage before you get there. But Grant understands this. Grant understands the importance of how Asians think. Grant understands the importance of things like losing face.
Explain.
When you deal with Asia and cause people to lose face, it's worse than trying to put them in bankruptcy. Let me give you an example, okay? Yeah. I took over Turner International in, 87 or something like that. And we had a big project in Singapore, 2 40-story buildings. Ian Pei was the architect. And my predecessors had gotten in a dispute with the owner. And the owner was an old Singaporean. S.P. Tao, originally out of China, Shanghai Chinese, as smart a man as I've ever met. And we got in a dispute over some innocuous little issues, and my predecessors decided to go ahead and sue the owner. Okay? Now, this is a Singaporean in British court under a British legal system of which we knew nothing about. And when I took over the company, the job had been stopped for 2 years, and we had spent $6 or $8 million on lawyers and had our head up our ass. I finally, because the project manager knew and got along with Ian Pei, got Ian Pei to reintroduce the new team to the owner. And we found out that the main reason this lawsuit was going on, because the owner, the Chinese owner, S.P. Tao, had lost face and was embarrassed by the way our people out there on the project in Singapore treated them. So we're spending money on lawyers, they're spending money on lawyers, and we finally worked out a settlement with S.P. Tao to restart the project, the same contractors. We all got involved in the project together, but we caused them to regain face. And that is so critical, because if you cause an Asian in a position of power to lose face, you might as well walk away. You're out of the game. But anybody that does work in Asia knows this, except arrogant Americans that go out there that don't know their ass for first base. And you know, you happen to bring up in the discussion with Grant Newsom about the discussion Kissinger was having over a goddamn round table for the peace negotiations in Vietnam. No shit, you gotta have a round table. You've made that decision in the first 30 seconds.
Why do we need a round table? Why does it even matter?
Everybody is equal. Because everybody's equal at the table when you sit down.
Well,
restaurant in Hong Kong.
Why did they...
Because they weren't listening to the guys like Grant Newsom that knew that part of the world.
But did we argue?
You go into any big Chinese restaurant where all the families are meeting, all the business deals are done, it's a round table. I mean, that's Chinese 101.
Yeah, I had Chinese food last night. It was a round table.
You were at a round table.
No, I was at a round table. But they had booths there, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can have them. But when business and family things are being done, you sit at a round table. Because you're all equal at a round table.
Did we argue about that? Why didn't we just say, okay,
yeah.
Who gave a shit about the shape of the table?
Kissinger.
Kissinger did.
Kissinger and the Nixon White House.
Meanwhile,
we'll lose, what, 100 a week? Killed?
We need a rectangular table.
Yeah, come on.
I cannot.
But Grant Newsom understands this stuff, and he's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy that truly understands the Asian way of thinking. And I believe the military leaders we got in place right now, Mattis and Kelly and Dunford, are the same way. They understand that you got to pay attention to the culture of the people where you're trying to conduct a war. You can't go by the way the culture works in New York City or Washington, D.C. or San Diego. We, you know, in Washington, D.C., it seems in the Beltway, we act in La La Land. And, you know, it gets so goddamn frustrating. Here we're trying to pass a replacement health care bill, and we're not going to tell anybody what's in it. Give me a break. It's insanity.
So, at what point of this did you want this to, like, be, hey, is it me being too judgmental, or was Barack Obama a disaster for the nation?
Barack Obama wasn't a great leader in a lot of ways, but Bush and that team of assholes were unbelievably poor in what they were doing.
Okay.
Jumping into things thinking they knew all the answers.
Okay, I agree.
The sad part was Barack Obama didn't correct it.
So everything that I look at, like, what did the guy do, you know, what did the guy, okay, Bob Nielsen.
You got to calm down. You got to save some of your anger for when the gunner gets on.
He's texting me and pissing me off already. He's asking for phone numbers. He's calling out at Camp Pendleton. Nobody's answering their phone because they're having a division change of command. They're all out of parade practice. They're not picking up the phone and talking to the man, the myth, the legend, Mike Musselman. And he's pissed. Yeah. He's pissed, and he's calling all his friends, and he ditched all of his phone numbers, and now he's pissed off. So it's like, come on, man. Life's tough. It's tougher when you're stupid, Mike. What the hell? Why would you ditch all your phone numbers? Oh, because I'm going to Texas. I got to get away. Like, all right, bro.
You're going to have some great interviews.
Oh, yeah, trust me. Today's going to be good, okay? Today's gonna be good because now you got the rest of the idiots weighing in. So everybody's gonna have an opinion, and this is not gonna go well. Trust me. Who's the leader of TUMEF right now? Do you know?
I don't know.
I thought it was. Somebody told me it was Larry Nicholson, but
I don't know.
TUMEF. Public affairs, news, units, major subordinate commands, former Marine leaders. And then I click on leaders on TUMEF, and what is TUMEF? History and honors. Oh, TUMEF leaders. Major General Walter Lee Miller. Good God. He looks like Father Time. He was one of my SBCs at the basic school. Yeah, what happened to him, man? Holy shit.
You're getting old, Mike.
That is not good. That is not a good photo. Just on a positive email. Hey, Mac, do you have anything positive to say today? Yeah, I had some awesome Chinese food last night. Okay. It was awesome. Honest. I swear to God. It was, some spicy orange chicken, some shrimp fried.
And you had it at a round table.
Shrimp fried rice. My daughter graduated from eighth grade, and we had to go to this graduation ceremony. Oh, my God. But I will say this. I am a huge fan of the Hispanic culture. And, you know what? I don't care how they got here. That culture works its ass off. Okay? And you see them, they still, you know, have a big sense of family. And, you know, my daughter goes to a school that's largely Hispanic. In fact, like, I'm a minority. I'm like, yeah, this is not so bad. I'm like, I'm all right with it. Like, what's up, mother? Any other white people here? Hey, there's one. What's up? You know, but it was interesting. It was cool. All the kids were dressed well. You know, you didn't have that, like, yeah, I didn't see any of this, which I see a lot. I'm in a shirt and tie, but I don't want to be really here in it. My parents made me do this, so my shirt's untucked. I look like a bag of ass. I didn't see much of that, and I like that. I like that. To me, it's how the melting pot works. You know, you come here.
Sounds like a good graduation. Yep.
Yeah. You know what I mean, Bob? When was the last time you went to a boot camp? Graduation.
We went down, we had a reunion of knife engineers and first shore party down at Paris Island, I'm going to say 6 years ago. In fact, that Marine corporal who had got the Navy Cross, who you've done that phenomenal interview with, he was actually there as a guest that day.
Oh, really?
The one with the Navy Cross, the one that had all the emotional problems and post-traumatic growth and all that.
Jeremiah Workman?
The guy you in the, yeah.
Workman
was
there?
There. Workman was there, and there was one other Navy Cross holder there.
Workman's just a good dude. He's a normal American dude.
Oh, but what a story.
Yeah.
What a story.
His wife runs a beauty parlor.
Yeah. And it's so powerful because the civilian side of the world has no clue what it means to these people with these kinds of awards and what they go through.
Right. Hey, any small unit leader that gave orders, right, and then people get killed because your orders, or they get wounded, right, and then you have to medevac him, and it's your friend, you're one of your guys, and he's bleeding, and you're watching it, and that happened because you sent him down that road or into that building, or you told him to sit over there and not over there. That's on you. I have a friend of mine.
And you live with it the rest of
the
life.
The rest of your life.
You told the medevac, don't come in, it's too dangerous.
Right.
It's on your shoulders.
Right, right, right. And so it's, you know, you it takes big balls. You know what? And it
takes even bigger balls for Workman to talk about it.
Yeah, what about the interview I did?
Talking about it.
With Richard Sisk the other day. Right, his basic school class had 50% casualties. What year did you go to basic school?
I was there in 63, September 63.
Okay, his basic
and,
school,
I was
667.
I listened to his interview.
Shit, man. And then I'll tell you what.
I ended up being a second lieutenant, but when you know 50% of you, I'm not going to make it.
Right, right. That's incredible.
That's not very good odds.
That's incredible. And the basic school class was almost 500 lieutenants. That's two classes thrown into one. You know, that's a lot of lieutenants going down range, and then going from Quantico to Vietnam. First one killed less than a month after they graduated. And I want to say December 18th.
Within 6 months, they were all over there.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. But let me go back to boot camp graduation. How cool in terms of the melting pot these young men are now, and women, they're now Marines, and their families haven't seen them in 2.5 months. How cool is it to see when they're dismissed and they get to go see their families and you see all the Kleenexes and all the handkerchiefs come out?
And as the Marine Corps said, the change is forever. You know, That's not just a coat of varnish on them. That change is right through to the core.
No pun intended. To me, that's the challenge, is it's to embrace the discipline lifelong. Well, let me ask you a question. I've never asked you this question, so I'll ask you now that I have you on. You've heard me do the programs about leadership at the point of confrontation, that every one of these marquee leadership failures, and you could probably recite me some from not only your career but your experience in Vietnam, where you have people that are doing the wrong thing, and you have other leaders there that say, hey, man, that ain't right. Don't do that. And the response is, hey, fuck you. Get out of here if you don't like it. And guess what? They do. And then it happens. And then it blows up in everybody's face. People dishonorably discharged, people going to the brig. Why do you think that happens? Do you think some people simply aren't fit for the pressure and the weight of being a leader? Even though they wear the rank?
Michael, in one sense, you've been blessed because you served under some really exceptionally good leaders. I had a slightly different experience in Vietnam and served under a couple. One was taken away in a straitjacket for being an alcoholic, and the other one never left the rear area. And when you get good leaders, it filters all the way down to PFC, nobody in the front outpost. And one of the problems, I think, in Vietnam was we hadn't had a war since Korea, and an awful lot of guys that had been in staff officer positions back in the States were dying to get to Vietnam to, quote, get their command checkbox, you know, knocked off. They were majors or lieutenant colonels, and they've been pushing that goddamn desk for 15 years. And they got over to Vietnam, and I'm talking more support battalions now, and they were shitty leaders.
Right.
And the infantry, because we had some goddamn good generals at the top, like Walt and Krulak and people like that, the infantry leaders either, you know, should have got off the pot. If they were good, they did well and they survived. And if they were shitty, they were relieved. But, you know, leadership makes a huge, huge, huge difference. You've got to be out in the front lines with the guys, finding out what the guys are doing, not sitting back in a goddamn remote area giving orders. Don't work that way.
Wow.
And every one of the good leaders that you have on that I listen to, every one of them has been up in the front lines with their guys doing that shit. And that's how you lead, by being there right where the action is.
And so the guys who shrink from that, I can imagine. So you're a gunny, I'm a staff sergeant. You keep calling this recruit a terrorist. Do I have the balls to confront you? To walk up to you and say, hey, gunny, you need to stop that. All right? You can't do that to this kid. And you say, hey, Matt, get the fuck out of here. And do I have the balls to look at you and say, do you want to go? You want to fight? Let's fight about it then. Because to me, that's having the moral courage to save you from something bad happening to you, save your career, and save the institution. I think the Marine Corps should promote fighting. Let's go. Let's go out and fight. Don't be afraid. Be a fighter. I think the Marine Corps would be better off with more fighting in it.
I was on one of the very first operations I went on in Vietnam, and we were operating between Chulai and Tam Ki, and I was attached to 5th Marines, and, you know, I had been in country about 2 weeks. I didn't know my ass from first base. So I went out with our guys that were doing medevacs and ammunition resupply and that kind of shit. And, you know, I was attached to an infantry unit. I had three or four guys there, and we kind of handled the wound and shit like that. And the infantry had captured some Viet Cong, and there was a captain there, and I'm not sure it was a company commander, or he might have been an S3 guy. They couldn't get any information out of Viet Cong, and so this captain was going to put him in a helicopter to scare the shit out of him.
Right.
And I was, you know, I'm the new guy there, not about to jump in front of the goddamn infantry structure. and say, hey, you can't do that shit. And you know what? I've regretted it for my whole goddamn life because I should have told the guy, you can't do that shit.
Right.
You can't take a guy up in a goddamn helicopter and even threaten to throw him out.
Right.
Because it ain't worth it to do it that way.
Right. And that was
my mouth shut then.
That was the trick. That
was like,
right. People heard that story all the time, right?
Yeah, but I'm there watching it. The guy doing this is 10 feet away from you.
You know, it was really really interesting, Bob, as a lieutenant at the basic school in 1984. I was at the basic school. All right, the guys who taught us were probably been in the Marine Corps for probably about 10 years, 7 to 10
yeah.
years. They were raised, and some of them had fought in Vietnam as prior enlisted Marines. The senior guys
right.
had fought there, you heard these stories from staff NCOs about these kind of things. You heard stories about scalps. You heard stories about ears. You heard stories about taking people up in helicopters and pushing them out of helicopters or scaring them out. But, and our institution and every combat institution deals with this kind of stuff. Okay. Because when you go to war, it gets frayed, right? Read the old breed, with the old breed, Sledge's book. You know, read Helmet for My Pillow, and whether it's, you know, it's field stripping Japanese soldiers, you know, and all the other barbaric things we do in combat, these challenges have always existed. And so to me, it's I don't know that we prepare, you know, we talk about moral courage and things like that, but I don't know that we get right down to it. And the martial arts guy, Jack Hoban, on, you know, he said, you know, we have to coach police officers what to say. Here's what you say. Here's what you say to the person that you're going to confront. Here's how you say it. Because we're a non-confrontational society now. Most
yeah.
guys who go to boot
yeah.
camp have never been in a fight in their life. So if you don't have a lot of self-confidence, how do you look at somebody and say, we ain't doing that?
And you got to learn that. You got to learn when we were attached to different units, you'd see who the good leaders were, and you gravitate towards them.
Right.
Because you knew, and it didn't matter whether it was a staff sergeant or a gunny or a goddamn lieutenant.
No, you
know.
You
got to sit together, and the guys listen to him. You do what he wanted.
The guys who can lead,
and then
they just stand out. And it's
yeah.
the natural selection. And I used to, when I took over my company, I said, look, my challenge every day is to prove to you that if we all take off our rank, you still point to me when the shit hits the fan and says he needs to be in charge. When we all take off our rank. I have to prove that to you every day. That's my job. That's my job. That's
well,
my responsibility.
The thing that I did when I got there, I spent the first 10 days out with my guys in the field with the 5th Marines, not saying shit, just going along with them doing what they were doing and going by helicopter from battle area to battle area. And shit, I did that. They would listen after that. Because they knew you were willing to be there with them. But you got to listen to them because they knew that and been doing that shit. You know, they'd been there for 6 months. You know, I was a brand newbie coming over, you know, as a first lieutenant. But as far as they were concerned, I was like in the Marine Corps for one day.
But
followed them and listened to them, you were the boss, but you had to learn what the hell were they really doing. And what amazed me is they did this shit day after day after day. And as far as I was concerned, 20 years later, every one of them should have gotten the goddamn medal.
Yeah. But what is it, Bob? It's sharing that burden. It's proving themselves and show. And that, but that's how leaders do it. Leaders don't show up and put their hands on their hips and go, dun, da, da, dun. The old, you remember that sound when Imperial Margarine would do their commercials and then the big crown would come on somebody's head, you know?
Or when the colonels would come out and starch utilities and shine boots.
Yeah, hey, Devil Dog.
Some godforsaken hill.
Hey, Devil Dog, how are
things? Get out of the airplane. And
how are things going?
All the cameras are clicking.
Yeah.
All the cameras are clicking.
As opposed to Jarvis Lynch telling the stories of, He went into LZ, God, I can't remember. Tim was telling him, I can't remember the name, but LZ starts with an M. And the NBA had registered on, you know, on that LZ as a possible LZ, right? So they went in there with their battalion. After they got 3.5 companies in, the NBA unleashed on them. They medevaced 158 Marines from that LZ that day. Okay. And then who flies in? The regimental commander, Colonel Bob Barrow, right? He said, what do you need?
Yep.
What do you need from me? And General Lynch started, he got emotional when he was telling the story. And then the next day, who flies in? General Raymond Davis, the division commander,
yep.
Right? He said,
Right.
And every other thing times three, I think. You read Ray Davis's awards, it's like, holy shit, man.
Lou Walt used to show up, and there was no goddamn puffery, no nothing. Because
right.
Lou Walt would talk with the corporal and knew what the hell he was talking about. And everybody respected the shit out of him.
Right.
And you didn't have any of the starch utility colonels floating around when Lou Walt came out.
No. And Davis gets out of
the way he was.
Davis gets out of his helo that lands on down a road. And he comes walking up, and Major Lynch goes down the road to meet him, and he says, hey, sir, I don't know that it's safe for you to be here. And he said, Davis looked at me, he said, son, this is my AO. I'll go anywhere in this AO that I fucking want to.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, sir. And he said, but do you know the strength we got from that? Their presence?
Oh, of course.
Their presence.
Those kids would have jumped on anything for that guy.
Right. And my point is this, is that leadership's not easy, and especially in these scenarios. That corporal in Iraq, in Hamandiyah, when, you know, the sergeant, the squad leader says, hey, we're gonna go snatch this dude and kill him. And he says, I'm not doing it. Right? And then they tweak the plan so that he'll be involved in snatching him, but he doesn't have to kill him.
Yeah.
Okay, he started down the right road, but he got confronted. And we need to tell him, don't be afraid, man. You want to fight? Let's fight. But if any one of those people steps up, Bob, and does the right thing, nobody gets a bad conduct discharge. Nobody's dead. Nobody's going to the brig. And so I say, just like again, the amazing fight that Mothers Against Drunk Driving waged against Marines, okay, in the Marine Corps ethos, when Bob was a Marine, was a drinking and fighting and a whoring organization, okay? And the notion that you would pick up somebody's keys off a bar, Bob, and tell them not to drive was what?
Oh, you never do that.
You never do that. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, though, succeeded in convincing the American people, right, that you doing that was an act of friendship and ultimately a lack of love and caring, right? We need to convince the Marine Corps, right, the leaders in the Marine Corps, that you intervening is an act of loyalty and devotion to a peer, not turning your back. And if you need to fight for it, then go ahead and fight for it.
The lesson you learn and the lesson we're talking about and the lesson I learned in the Marine Corps was, you do what's right. You don't do necessarily what the law says or what some asshole boss says. You do what's right. And I've used that same goddamn principle all my time with Turner Construction, even when I was president of the country, president of the company. You do what's right. And if some asshole politician or somebody in some political position say, oh, no, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you do what's right. And it amazes me when I listen to Grant Newsom and Bill Dunford, they constantly go back to doing what's right. And they think about it. And they look and analyze all the elements of the problem. But the Marine Corps taught me that, and it's been so good for me the whole rest of my career. And sure, I ended up getting fired from Turner, but got rehired. You know, you go through those things, but you learn that you got to do what's right. You got to stand up and say, that's bullshit. I'm calling you on that. You can't do that. And that's how you get rid of the shitty leaders. Now, the problem is, in peacetime, it's real easy for shitty leaders to hide under the bureaucracy.
Wow.
I really wish that every goddamn member of Congress and the Senate in Washington, D.C., once a month, would be made to walk down past the Vietnam Memorial at 6 a.m. and just keep your mouth shut and look at it for a while. And then think about this asshole tomfoolery you're doing in Washington, D.C. There's a price we pay for this crap. Yeah, we got wounded coming in from Syria now. You know, I mean, there's a price we pay for this. And these goddamn politicians don't have a clue. And I love it when I see vets like Brian Mast and Tammy Duckworth run for Congress and the Senate. And we need a lot more of them.
Right.
To bring their faces to deal with reality.
Okay, I thought you were going to come on. I thought you were going to come on and make this happy time. No?
This is happy.
Okay.
Get those politicians to walk down past the Vietnam Memorial once a month.
Right, right, like they'll do that.
Everybody elected to office.
Like they'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. And then tell me about your goddamn round table versus rectangular table.
Yeah, like they'll do it. It's a theoretical discussion.
I know.
Except it's not. Except it's not.
Hey, no, it's not.
Here's what's even crazier, though. 20 of them could have been dead last week. And let me ask you this. Do you think what happened last week will have any impact on their behavior and the way they conduct themselves towards each other and the tone of the discourse in Washington, D.C.?
I would love to say, yes, it will. My suspicion is 99% that it won't make a bit of difference. I mean, I think half the characters in Washington have forgotten about it already.
Right. Okay. All right. So nobody thinks that the fact that 20 of those guys, but for the fact that that dude had too much on his mind that day, and he starts at the third base dugout, and he should have started, if he walks in on the first base side, he starts whacking people left and right. But he starts at the third base side, and he screws it up. And maybe he knew that the Capitol Police were behind the general vicinity of home plate. Maybe he saw them hanging out in their car, and he said, well, I got to do it from here. I don't know. But in any case, you're a fool if you don't consider the fact that a lot more people could have been dead.
And it's
pretty sobering when everybody that I ask that question to says, no, it will have no effect on them. They will continue to drive this thing into the ditch.
I mean, the animosity between the Republicans and the Democrats that fostered and fueled every day by the leadership is absolutely unbelievable.
Right.
Those assholes ought to be talking to each other and working with each other instead of fighting. And when I see this crap going on over the health bill, where the Republicans are doing 12 guys in the closet writing the health bill, this is lunacy. This goddamn health bill is going to affect everybody in the country.
No, it's not, because it's never going to see the light of day. Right.
And then,
it's a joke.
You saw the thing the other day where Tammy Duckworth said, I want assurances that these new health bill is not going to affect veterans. And Mitch McConnell said, no, I won't give you that insurance. Well, where's that effect? Come on.
Of course. Like, come on. What are we, choir boys? We're
going
to do
it. You get me to be like Michael McNamara today.
We're fools if we don't think, that this is the way it's going to go. But here's my question. So my question that I started the show out with is, what changes this? And is it, do we have to turn into Illinois? Where you have to shut the lottery off? Because every bit of your revenue.
Or turn into California. California is a great financial shape.
Yeah, we just raised another $500 billion by taxing gas.
Yeah, you got the biggest prison system in the whole world. It costs, what, $80,000 a year to keep a prisoner out there.
Hey, we got a lot of people that need to be prisoned. Okay. Hey, leave our prison system alone. I have to look into California's fiscal health. Is it that bad? I have to look into it. People refer to it, but there's two states with huge public pension issues are Illinois and New Jersey, are the two states I know of. Illinois hasn't passed a budget in 3 years. They're on par with the federal government. So, all right, let's change. Can you hang out for
a
few more minutes?
Let's talk about vets in business.
Okay. First of all, you had the opportunity to spend some time with Tim Maxwell out up on Ogden Ranch for what?
Fabulous.
Flag Day?
Well, Tim Maxwell, wounded Marine colonel, shrapnel in the brain, a great, great legendary leader in the Marine Corps. When he was first wounded 10, 11 years ago, he went through some rehab at Walter Reed in Bethesda, and I met him. And he actually started the Wounded Warrior Battalions in the Marine Corps under General Amos, became a big supporter of Maxwell, and they put together the Wounded Warrior Battalion, initially at Lejeune and then one at the West Coast. And then Tim had some setbacks with his injury and then got a medical discharge. And he and his wife, Shannon, who's a sweetheart, were trying to figure out what they could do to help veterans. And Tim is a very independent, strong-willed, tough Marines. I've met guys that served with him and under him before he was injured, and I think he was a legend in his own time.
He was.
But Tim came up with the idea of buying literally a farm in a place called Rural Retreat, Virginia, and he's got a little farmhouse and a cabin on it, and now he's got a trailer for veterans, and it's got some barns, and he's got sheep and goats and chickens and a trout stream. But he's kind of made it a place where wounded veterans, particularly with TBI and bad post-traumatic growth, can go with their families, camp out, spend a couple of days. And the main day of the year that he does this is Flag Day, which was last weekend or the weekend before, but he has vets coming in all the time. And I guess he must have had 100 vets and some of his family there. And they were all people that had a bunch of injuries, that had recovered, struggled, some successfully, some not so successfully. But basically, Tim has made this kind of a little place where you can go and be yourself. The community pitches in and helps the people that live around there. He's got a hill as you come into the little entrance to his barn and the house, and he's got a big flag memorial on the hill with the American flag and flagpoles for all the branches of the service. And he has barbecue food, and he doesn't charge anybody anything.
Right.
This is Maxwell and Semper Max, his nonprofit, doing this. And him and Shannon, and they put their heart and soul into this. But it is a great, great tool for helping the veterans that have been injured and the ones with post-traumatic growth and the ones that know them and support them to share some things and get some hurdles behind them and move forward. And so Tim, who will be the first to tell you, doesn't know anything about medicine, has become a phenomenal doctor for wounded and injured. And Shannon is equally good. And, it's wonderful setting up the Wounded Warrior regiments in the Marine Corps when we were at the peak of the battles, when we had tons and tons of wounded returning to active duty. But Tim, in his own way, has figured out a way to help veterans. I'm on the board of Semper Max. Justin Constantine's on the board. He's got a couple other people, but what he's doing
I want to be on the board. If you two assholes are on the board, why can't I be on the board?
Well, first you got to interview him, for Christ's sake.
You
got to
call him. He's playing hard to get. I did. I talked to him. Now I'm on his shit. Okay.
You, you, get,
I'm on his
Get him on the phone. Get his interview. Believe me, we need you to be talking about him and what they're doing. There's other veterans.
I told you, he owes me a phone call. The last time I talked to him, he goes, "Mac, I got to run. I gotta go. I'm headed out and about. I'll call you back later today and update you on what is something they were doing." I was working current ops for the division. I told Nielsen this. I said, "Hey, the son of a bitch owes me a call." He never came back and called me.
But last time you spoke to him, look what happened.
I know. Hey, easy. That
he got blown up.
That was, if he had stayed and talked to me, it wouldn't have happened. You know what? That is the randomness of, you know, I talked to, who did I talk to about this week? It might have been Richard Sisk about the randomness. I asked him this question. You know, there's a monument to hit that class. It's outside of Graves Hall at the basic school, named after Second Lieutenant Terrence Graves, Terry Graves, as he called it. Terrence Graves on his Medal of Honor citation and award. But he called him Terry. And, you know, he paints this picture. He's a baseball player. You know, he winds up in third force recon. And then, you know, he fights, you know, like a madman. And I said, so, 50 years later, how to make sense of it? And he says, you know what? He said, I don't think you do. He said, there's a randomness and luck that goes into combat. And he said, I think it takes you a lot of years before you accept that you can't make sense out of it. And I thought that is wisdom. Don't expect this shit to be logical or on the backside of it for you to be able to make sense of it. You won't.
Mike, I was on my fifth or sixth helicopter landing in the first couple of weeks into a landing zone. I was talking to some infantry guys. We were kind of casually talking, okay? And bingo, the guy 10 foot away gets a bullet through the head. The sniper got him. And, you know, I'm so new, I said, holy shit, this is real. And you ask yourself the whole rest of your goddamn life, why did he get it in the head? I don't even know the guy's name. Not a clue. But it is a total randomness, and luck is such a huge factor. And anybody that doesn't believe that is full of shit. Now, you got to have a lot of training. You got to be prepared. But the randomness of this is mind-boggling. You know, why did that helicopter go down and the one you're in not go down?
Yeah.
Explain that.
Yeah.
Utterly unbelievable.
Yeah. And so it was sage advice 50 years later. How do you make sense of it? He said, you know, the long answer is you don't. And you learn to live with it, though. You learn to live with it.
And you can't really talk to anybody about it because, you know, somebody doesn't want to hear it.
Right? Only the other guys who understand it. Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise people look at you like they say they're very gracious, right? Most of them, and they say they understand. But you know they don't because they can't. And it's not their fault.
No.
All right, let's talk. So you were with Maxwell. He owes me a phone call, right? And so
yeah, he owes you a phone call. He will talk to you.
So don't try to play that shit with me. Look what happened the last time he called you. It wasn't my fucking fault.
I told him you're a really angry, upset radio host. But occasionally you have nice moments.
Moments
and
of clarity. Drunks call it moments of clarity. All right. No, he's an awesome guy. He's an awesome guy. No, I mean, it happened like this, right? I'm on the phone with him and I'm talking to him and we're trying to work through some issue where the division had questions about something they were doing and so we're working through, and it's just the stuff of daily business. And he's like, all right, I gotta run. I'll call you back. Then we get a medevac request from 22nd MU, and, you know, two urgent surgicals, blah, 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 mortar attack, da, da, da. And then, you know, probably 30 minutes later, Roger Turner, who's now the Brigadier General in charge of the task force in Helmand, he looks at me, and I had taught Turner, now we're both majors together, and Turner looks at me, and he said, one of those guys was Max. And he and Tim Maxwell are good buddies. And, you know, we didn't know how bad the injury was, and but it's urgent surgical, which means that if they don't get to a hospital in an hour, they're going to be dead. And then you start reading about him. You start reading about him.
He's alive and kicking now.
Yeah, and all the great things he's done. Our medicine forward, absolutely incredible. But the heroic effort it takes to live with the injuries that we can now sustain you from. And if you think about the people that you've heard on this program, and Bob has been instrumental to getting them on. Justin Constantine, gunshot wound through the head. You know?
Yeah.
And then they come
Pat
on
Markle
and they tell them.
Both his legs above the knee.
Yeah.
Pat Murray, two guys working with Turner.
Ty.
Pat Murray lost one leg, burned them both hands.
Ty, what's Ty's last name?
Oh, yeah, the Marine colonel shot in the head Oh, God, I can't think of it right now. There's a guy in Tampa.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, so Justin's wound essentially misses his brain. It comes in behind his ear and comes out the front of his face, right? Annihilates his face.
Which is a miracle in itself.
Right, so, but the trajectory, Ty's doesn't. Ty's is a through-and-through gunshot wound to the head.
Yeah.
And he's alive, and he's, and their courage and their selflessness, incredible. Absolutely incredible. Humbling to be around.
And their caregivers.
Oh, my God. Well, you can't say enough for them. And it was interesting. Ty said,
the burden on the caregivers in so many ways is as much or more than on the wounded.
All right. So let's talk jobs now. Let's talk Turner Construction. We're not going to talk jobs. We're going to talk careers. So where are we? What are we doing? And we need to make sure that people, if they're looking for careers, if you have friends that are looking for careers, by all means, listen to Nielsen right now. Most of the time he's full of shit, but on this he's not. Hit it, Nielsen.
This is the happy Bob Nielsen as opposed to the angry Mike McNamara.
Ah, what the hell? You came on and threw gasoline all over the place.
Listen, I just brought up Rumsfeld's name, that's all.
Stop.
Anyway, we got a program going that I've been working with Michael on. If you're in the military and you've had some experience with leadership, and I'm talking at the enlisted and officer level, we don't care, and you've done some activities in combat-type situations where you've been responsible for getting a team or a group of people to go out and accomplish something, and now you're looking what to do with yourself for the rest of your life, we're looking for people to come in and join Turner in career positions. I did it when I got back from Vietnam. I brought one of my buddies back who'd been a combat engineer in Vietnam, and he spent a career, became a vice president, ran operations down in the Ohio area. But we're looking for veterans that can walk and chew gum, and like being leaders, and like getting shit done, and we want to bring them into the company. We've had two so far come through the process. Their paperwork is in the company. They're in discussions and interviews with Turner right now. I've got four or five more that are in the works. I'm waiting for their paperwork to come in. If you're interested, I want you to send me an email, Robert N like Nancy 802@mac.com, M-A-C like McNamara.com.
Nice.
Send me an email or send an email to Michael McNamara. We'll get your information into the hands of people in Turner. They've got a lot of veterans working there now. They've been very good hiring veterans. Hell, they were good hiring veterans back in the Vietnam War, and they were good hiring veterans after World War II. And we're looking to find veterans that are interested in career leadership opportunities where you can do things similar to what you're doing in the service and go out and put teams together and get projects done. And we're looking for men. We're looking for women. Enlisted officers, but if you've got the demonstrated capability to do things in the service, we think those skills apply to what we do in the construction industry. And what we're kind of doing is looking at your 3, 4, 5 years in the military as being the equivalent of college, because you've learned how the real world works. And we're having some success with it. And it's a low-key program, but we'll make get SWATs for you, and we'll assign mentors to you, and have people look over your shoulder to kind of give you advice and ideas on how to learn the lingo and learn the system. But we're doing it, and it works. And we know we've got proven records for hiring wounded vets, that it really works, and we've had success with it. We've got double amputees working for us right now. Is that a good sales pitch?
Yeah, it's awesome. But the biggest thing, is we're not talking just jobs here. We're talking, you know,
no, we're talking career
careers, right? Legit careers, yeah, with a major company, and it's awesome. And so again, yeah, whether you stay there 20 years, 5 years, you're going to be there's a company that's looking for you. Okay, that's looking
for
you.
And we're looking
for
leaders. We're looking for people that can put a group of people together and go get it done. And that's what you do in the military. I mean, I don't care whether you're in the air wing or infantry or artillery, you put a team together and you go get the job done. And the skills that you learn in the military, we've identified are the same skills we think are successful in the construction industry. And we build buildings all over the world, from San Diego to New York City and from Kazakhstan to Sri Lanka to Seoul, Korea. And if you want to do things that you got as much enjoyment out of doing as you when you were in the service, construction industry is a great opportunity.
All right, and again, the big thing is it's a worldwide company, and so does it matter? Again, I've had different guys on here talking about how to get your career going, and one of the things they talk about is when you get out, think that you're going to have to make one, maybe two more PCS moves, that you might not be able to just go straight to where you where you want to be. So Turner is a company that's worldwide, and again, they're looking for you and your problem-solving skills, your people skills, all the things you have, and your getting it done skill, right? It is business,
yep.
All right? That's what they're looking for.
And
got all that
with
stuff
different nationalities and different cultures and people from different backgrounds. That's all important. And what the hell is that's what you learn in the service.
Right.
That's what you learn in the military.
So
and I believe there's a lot of other companies out there that do the same thing, but Turner has found the experience with the military veteran is outstanding. And you can make a great contribution to us. And we can help you. A lot of guys are getting out of the military, some even after 20 years, both enlisted and officers, and they all believe, oh, nothing can ever replace the Marine Corps. Well, I'm telling you, I've seen it. You can get involved with a good company that's got good leadership and have the same sense of satisfaction that you had in the military.
And again,
it works.
And Turner's no stranger to this. So, all right, so Bob.
And you don't want to become a Beltway salesman for a Beltway bandit, you know, trying to get military contracts.
Yeah.
We go out and do the goddamn job.
Who needs that? Who needs that stuff? All right, how do they get a hold of you? Again, go ahead.
Bob Nielsen is my name. My email is Robert, N like Nancy, 802@mac.com. I have a website, just Google 100 Entrepreneurs. It's a website called 100entrepreneursproject.ning.com. You go to the website, send me an email, get the information to Michael or me, and then we will get it in the Turner system, and we will have Turner people reach out and talk to you and start the interview process. Like I said, we got two that we're working on right now and four or five more that are in the pipeline. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to just give me a call. My phone number is on my website. You can call me. I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
Easy stuff.
You've got something to offer us, and we've got something to offer you.
All right. All right. Now, Turner Construction is a great supporter of veterans, and you don't have to look any further than their support of Bob's initiative here. And ultimately, here's the thing they know. They know that it's going to be good for their company, right? They're not into just, yeah, let's do this, be benevolent. That's not how business works.
No, this isn't for charity. Right. You should want good people to help run the company.
Right. Right.
And remember, Turner has been a huge supporter of 100 Entrepreneurs. The 100 Entrepreneurs, where we help vets start their own business, we've got over 180 veterans that have started their own business now. I counted up the other day, it's 169 different kinds of business. Everything you can imagine.
Wow.
And Turner has been my biggest supporter to do this. And it works. I got people like Bob Woodard Foundation that help, people like Wounded Warriors, but Turner has been the biggest supporter.
Wow.
And guess what? We got veterans that have gone out, started their own company, and come to work for Turner as subcontractors. It works. We know what veterans can do.
No, so, you know, Bob, that's awesome. That's
Google
awesome.
100 Entrepreneurs. Take a look at what we do. In fact, I've got a little bit of a program right now to start using Instagram to get the word out. And we're working on that right now. But we're on Facebook. You go to 100 Entrepreneurs. It's an open group. And you can see what we're doing. You can hear about our classes at Fort Belvoir and Walter Reed. We do programs down in Texas with a guy by the name of Travis Green, who Michael knows.
Right.
We've got a vet out in San Francisco, H.G. Tran, who's helping other wounded vets. But take a look at what we're doing. Facebook has been our best vehicle for communicating with the veterans.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, let me tell you, I'll tell you, Bob, you'll be sympathetic with this, but I've talked to guys from, organizations like the Marine Corps Combat Correspondents Association,
right.
The Marine Corps Mustang Association, and they are struggling. How do we market? How do we keep our organization alive in this day and age where... You know, younger Marines may or may not join. Are we perceived as an old guy organization and something they don't want to be a part of? And will ultimately it mean the death of our organization? And what do we do? How do we do it? This whole social media beast. It's pretty interesting discussion. At the end of the day, because it can be the life of death or death of an organization. And
you look at how many of the younger veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan have Facebook groups.
Oh, they all do.
You know, 2nd yeah. Battalion, 8th Marines, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. Unbelievable.
Right, right.
And they share stuff on social media.
Right, right. No, without a doubt.
People got to be aware of that.
Right.
And truly, I believe social media has been extremely helpful in vets with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic growth in their recovery process.
Right.
They will tend to text people and communicate with people in that mode and fashion until their speech gets better.
Well, and let me just tell you, I mean, and we've seen them do all kinds of different things with social media. One is different battalions, and it's subsets within the battalion. So it's 1-5 battalion that deployed to Ramadi in 2005. They have their own page, and they have their own network of phone numbers. And when they perceive somebody's in trouble, they get on that phone tree, and somebody that's near them gets in a vehicle and goes and sees them physically.
Yep.
Hey man, are you all right?
I belong to a group on Facebook called ICOR Vietnam, and it's all vets, Army and Marine Corps, the Weapon ICOR in Vietnam, and there's been phenomenal stories and photographs posted. And just the other day, I ran across a thing from some guys that were in First Shore Party, the group I was with, a couple of names I didn't recognize, but it's amazing how it worked.
All right, what else do you want to get off your chest this morning since you're calming things down before I let you go?
Well, I wanted to get you calmed down so you can speak to, your gunner.
I
didn't
that.
Want you to get him all upset and aggravated at the world.
He's already pissed.
And believe me, the country was a lot more screwed up in '68 when we had an amazing Secretary of Defense, I think it was.
Why do you go there? I'm not related to the guy, okay? He was an idiot.
I'm taking your word, Mike. Taking your word, Michael.
Unbelievable. You call me Michael like my mother. All right. On that note, you're done. All right, Nelson, what else you got going
today? Enjoyed it.
What else you got going today?
I met with a group in the community this morning and talked to them about what we're doing with wounded vets, and they want to do a story about it in the community. And then this afternoon, we're trying to put a little addition on the clubhouse up here, and I'm going to meet with some architects that we're working with and see if we can get that moving.
Awesome. All right.
Enough to keep me busy.
Exactly. The rust does not grow.
I was at Walter Reed yesterday.
Under Nielsen's feet. All right, trust me. I told the story last night to a friend of mine whose son is badly injured. He has these sleep terrors at night, and he wound up going through a window and falling two stories onto a balcony. And he's got nerve damage and all this other stuff. And also the psychological piece of having, you know, his arm, one of his arms and one of his legs not usable. And he's a kid's an athlete.
Yeah.
He's a football player, played professionally in Europe. Now he can't do anything. And I talked to him about the importance of the camaraderie that you feel with other guys that are going
Absolutely.
Through the same kind of things. And I told the story of who's the dude who wrote the article about the Boston Marathon. What's his name? Patrick?
Oh, Patrick Downs.
Patrick Downs. Patrick Downs talking about
yep.
other, like, above-the-knee double amputees teasing him about
yep.
his below-the-knee single-leg amputation. Oh, does Patrick have a boo-boo? Does Patrick have a paper cut? And my friend was laughing. He said, you know what? He said, that's what makes it tolerable. He said, because it's just like any other thing that you would go through, but you're going through it with a very different group. He said, that's hilarious. I said, yeah, you can see it, right? Yeah. Busting his balls for having
Patrick and his wife, Jessica, and they were both blown up by the bomber at the Boston Marathon. Patrick lost one leg and Jessica lost two. Finally got discharged from Walter Reed a week ago and gone back to Boston.
That's awesome.
And Patrick and Jessica are two of the greatest people in the world, and their closest friends now are wounded veterans that they met during their 2 years of rehab at Walter Reed.
Well, his
really an amazing story, and they're out helping others.
Right. That's the way he talks about how moving his experience was with them, how they accepted him,
yep.
how they changed his life. Awesome stuff. All right,
you know, the doctors did a great job on him in Boston when they were blowing up, but the rehab. The world-class rehab they needed was at Walter Reed.
Right. Interesting. All right, Nielsen. I hope you do for others
Always
today.
Always great talking to you.
Yeah.
Keep up the good job.
Yeah, I hope you do to others today what you've done for me, so thank you very much.
Well, you're talking, you're smiling. I actually got you to laugh.
Oh, trust me. I have to get after Barack Obama right now, so it's not going to last long.
Have a good one. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, exactly. Semper Fi, Mac. Semper Fi, Mac used to be kind of a catch-all phrase, and it would have been appropriate right there. Kind of like screw you or suck it up, Semper Fi. Anyway, it's interesting, the World War II terms. We're going to take a break. This hour, Mac Talk, brought to you by our friends at Battlemog. A friend of mine just texted me last night. Hey, man, what's the name of that company that sells the mugs? Battle Mug. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.